Gavin.
Thank you for asking me to share and be here. I'm really extremely grateful to be clean today. I'd like to thank my higher power for giving me another opportunity to choose this way of life, because I've been given quite a few opportunities. I'm a little nervous. I'll just tell you, I got to just get myself centered here, because I've been struggling. I've been working on a personal goal this year, and it has it's taken a lot of effort, and it's been a gift from my God in the biggest way in my life. But it has taken me away from my usual amount of meetings and fellowship, like to some degree. It has lessened that. And, you know, I'm starving for it. I'm loving being here. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing, because I just, the goal just got completed on the Friday that I drove up here. So this is my entrance back into where I need to be. Now, I know that I believe that I can stay clean a day at a time without needing, you know, several meetings a week. Where, like, I have enough of the basics. I can do it. I have a support from that. But I know that also my quality of life is directly affected by the amount of meetings that I attend on a week. And for me, that's because my understanding of what my disease is that once I take away the drug, I still have a lot of problems that brought me to it in the first place. And if I don't treat that in an ongoing manner, like the greatest thing I learned from the number of relapses I had is that yesterday's recovery is not going to keep me clean today. And so I'm real aware of that. Like, I'm real big on vigilance, and I'm not as terrified as I was when I came back. You know, I mean, I was terrified because I had the last time I had relapsed. I'll just give you a little brief background on that. Is I had stayed clean for, I'd been around for a little while, in and out, in and out, and then I ended up staying clean for like 7 years and accomplishing some things in my life. I changed my life. I thought I'd never go back to using. I really, like, I was in service. I worked steps. It wasn't like I wasn't there. It wasn't like I didn't admit it. But somewhere along the line, I missed that a day at a time thing. I thought that a day at a time thing was something that somebody said to me just to help me make it through the day. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get how big that was. Like, just for today, I got to do what I need to do to stay clean. And slowly but surely, other things came before my recovery, and meetings started falling away, my support group started falling away, I started getting busy. And before I knew it, you know, I was doing some spiritual principles in one realm, but boy, the disease in my life was so insidious and so tricky. It got me into a lot of things. Like, I don't really try to analyze it all anymore, to try to figure it all out or why I use anymore, because when I first got back, that's what I would do all the time, because I wanted that safety. I wanted to know what did I do wrong so I could make sure I didn't, you know, do it. And it's like, because I got a God in my life, you know, and because of my process, I don't have that urgency, because I know that if I just don't use today, I'm all right. That's all I got to do. I got to remember that every day. And I guess talking about the fourth and fifth step, I gotta share that, because it's so central to the way that the fourth and fifth step was helpful to me in my recovery this time. Like, I've done a few fourth and fifth steps. I first came into this program when I was 19, and when I first did my very first fourth step, it was actually a good experience. I was kind of looking forward to it, because I always felt like there was something wrong with me. And I wanted to fix me, you know, for a really long time. And I figured this was the way to do it. So I proceeded to write, you know, and I had a little fear going on, thinking, like, I'm going to miss something, da da da. I gotta get it all so that I can just figure out exactly what's wrong with me and then proceed to fix me in the rest of the steps. Like, God wasn't really quite in there, except that he gave me the steps. Like, I didn't get that. So I've been both sides of that fence with my first, second, and third step. I've been in the side where it's all me, and then I've been in the side where it's all God. And I wasn't doing anything, waiting for God to do it all for me. And my recovery today is like a balance. You know, today I was listening to the guy who was sharing before me, and he was giving the analogy of I think it was the chariot analogy, where you're driving, you know, God's driving and you're riding. You know, you can't step on the gas or the brakes or something. You're supposed to just let God go. And I was thinking, well, that doesn't work for me. Like, I'm thinking, like, I like that idea, and I wish I, but that doesn't, because I'm always stepping on the gas and the brakes, and I never know what's going on. And I'm thinking, like, what it's a real similar thing for me now, but it's just slightly different, which is like I'm in this chariot and God's not driving. You know what I mean? God is the navigator. And if I'm not paying attention, I won't hear where to go. You know what I mean? And sometimes even though God's talking, I'm still going too fast, I'm still going too slow, and I can't, you know what I mean? But until I get quiet enough to hear where God is leading me, I'm not, you know, on the path. I'm not on the path. And that's just for me, because it's been real important, because I'm such an addict. I'll go both extremes, like I really did. You know, first I expected that I would fix myself, and then I expected God to fix me. And I realize now it's this real kind of dance in between those two things. And so pretty much, the first time I had an experience with the fourth and fifth step, it was a real relief, because I had walked around with a lot of shame and a lot of guilt and a lot of self-loathing, which I still, you know, I mean, I still have self-loathing. That's still going on, and elements of that. But in truth, I mean, even though I had had several relapses after that first, fourth, and fifth step, that was so healing, that process, to be able to share that with another human being, to be able to admit that to myself, just the relief of that, you know. And they talk about that in other spiritual disciplines. It's that confession. It's that, you know what I mean? And then to have somebody receive it and not judge me but forgive me, you know, or relate to me even better, you know what I mean? That was a really beautiful process. But still, I was kind of like, I guess for me, this is my process and stuff, and I viewed recovery as like one of those things where I came in here and I learned, and it was this fixed thing. I was going to learn this truth, and that was the truth. And then I proceeded to, you know, like I said, fix my life, or have God fix me, or have you fix me. And I don't know if anybody's jiving what I'm saying, but like I'm one of those control freaks. You know what I mean? Like I am a control freak, and I gotta know how it's happening. It's so hard for me to just stay in the day, but that's the only place where my God lives. You know what I mean? Because staying in the day means I can't control it. It means I gotta stay here and wait for God to give me information to tell me whether is this still true today. You know what I mean? And that's hard because I want the truth. I want to know so I can escape. I want to skate, you know. I want to eat all my vegetables so I can eat dessert for the rest of my life, you know. And that's the truth. I really am like that, you know. But I'm learning about myself, you know. And part of the way I am is this process of this inventory is real big. Like I said, I mean, I think the first time was a big, you know, it was a confession, and there was another time where it was real, like, psychoanalytic. I was really into, like, self-help books and psychiatry. And like I said, it was all rooted in the fact that I had no self-acceptance, and I wasn't really able to receive the healing that my higher power, you know, offered me, at least at that time, on that level that I really felt like I wanted it. I'm trying not to judge my past so much, you know what I mean? Like, I guess it all worked out the way it was supposed to, you know? But it's cool because the one thing I really hooked on to this time of recovery was that everything we know about the truth is subject to revision. Everything we know is subject to revision, especially what we know about the truth. And that flipped me out, you know. It's like I didn't like that at first. But there is a security. Like, I didn't need to have it all spelled out. Like, this is the way to stay clean. You got to do this, 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 and this. Because I did all that before and I still use because I stopped doing it. You know, and really it was just about just don't use and keep going to meetings. They're the only two absolutes in my life today. That's it. And be open to spiritual principles. And the rest of it just changes. And the way that it's changing is awesome because when I came back here, the disease had progressed in such a strange way. Like somebody was saying the other night or last night that, you know, you take off right where you pick up right where you left off. And I was so determined because I'd had 7 years clean that wasn't going to happen. You know what I mean? Because if it did happen, that would mean that I was an addict. And you know what I mean? So I wasn't going to let it happen. So I wasn't going to use any needle. No needle. No. So and I did proceed to have like a 3-year relapse where I had one day of using, you know, syringes, and that was it. And the rest of it was destroying my sinus passages and all kinds of other crap that I never, you know. There was progression in a real insidious way. You know what I mean? The drugs, but because I wasn't on the Lower East Side, in the way that I was when I came here, my disease told me that I hadn't progressed, that I was handling it. You know what I mean? I had never been on methadone before, but now this time I was. You know what I mean? So there were a lot of things. And plus, the worst progression of all was the spiritual progression, spiritual death, because I was somebody who had been, like, wanting spiritual things since I was born. You know what I mean? And, like, I felt, like, alien about that, you know, for a very long time because my mother was real rational and real, you know, everybody thought that was weak and that wasn't really celebrated where I was growing up and stuff. I mean, and nothing against my parents. It's just that's the way that they were brought up. You know what I mean? It wasn't a real strong personal relationship with a God. And I was kind of considered, I felt like they kind of considered me a little flaky and I was a little hippie and a little that. So I just didn't feel like that was okay. In any case, coming to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, changed all that. Like, it's just been a journey of self-discovery, and it still is. You know, I try to get back on the topic. So it's hard to do that because you can't just talk about right that. You know, you got to talk about what it is that you know, kept me going and what has brought me to this, you know, to my current understanding of the fourth and fifth step. And I guess I'll just jump right into that. My most recent fourth step was coming off that last relapse, completely spiritually bankrupt. When I came back into these rooms, even though I had a God, like I was really, you know, God, you know, I was completely spiritually bankrupt. I had taken all these philosophy courses. I was into existential philosophy. I thought, because it made me feel safe. I felt like if I didn't trust or rely on God, then I wasn't going to get hurt when God didn't show up. So I had built a wall and protected myself in that way. And that was the way the disease worked on me. And let me tell you, it almost kept me out of these rooms. And that is the reason why I don't use today. More so than anything else. Like, I was dead when I got here. And it took years for me. I came in crying. I wanted to believe. I wanted to believe. And I did not believe. You know what I mean? I have some people that I was sharing that with in my area and stuff that we really went through it. And the fact that I got a God working in my life today is just a miracle. You know? Such a miracle. But in any case, this process, this time around, this fourth step was a real healing process. For some reason, because I had already done the confession and I had already done the trying to fix it, I was in a place where I was a little bit more open, and maybe because of getting my ass kicked, you know, all that time with those relapses and stuff, I was a little bit more open-minded, just a little bit this time. And let's see, I did the writing. I think, I really believe deeply in the process of writing. I'm a step writer, and I actually just personally believe that that is very healing. You know, I do journal writing, and I know in my life how it works for me. And I've seen how it works for other people that I work with and stuff, so I believe in that. You don't have to do it, but you know what? If you're wanting my experience, that works for me real well. So, you know, just the process, I got myself in a position of, okay, I'm not going to try to fix myself. I'm going to just try to let God do this. Let me just answer the question and not try to answer 16 pages on one question so I make sure I get everything because I'm still in fear, you know. Let me just answer the question, say the prayer, answer the question, and trust that my higher power is going to give me what I need for today, you know, because it's not a one-shot deal. It's not like I'm going to learn everything right now, you know. So I was open to being, I was open to it being more of a process. And because of that, even though I did drag my feet, it took me quite a while still to do it, but it was a much easier process. And there was some healing that went on. There was some places, there was one point when I was writing on my fourth step that I was not able to talk to my sister for, I think, 6 months because there was some feelings that were just intolerable for me. And that was part of how I dealt with it. I didn't know. I didn't have the coping mechanisms to deal with it. And that happened. And there were some really other healing things that happened while I was writing. I'll give you one. Probably one of the most healing miracles that has happened in my recovery. And I don't know if a lot of people will understand this, but when I first got clean for that 7-year period, I had gotten a dog. I first moved out on my own. I was like 20 years old or something. And my dog was, I was 6 months clean. I got this dog, right? And this is my family now because I'd moved away from my family. So this is my family. And, you know, for 7 years, we had this great relationship. She's like my daughter. I had no kids and stuff. You know, she was just this great, she was a great dog. We won't go into that. But she was a great dog, you know. And she was my family, and she was my greatest source of love, unconditional love. And when I relapsed, I didn't abuse her. I didn't, you know, she ate. But I wasn't capable of giving her love, you know. Anybody knows a dog, you know what I mean, they are going to die. You know, that's it. she just proceeded to get one sickness after another, diabetes, Cushing's disease, she was blind, she was deaf, like, it was like all these things. And, you know, people will say, like, I am in a place where I feel like I have some responsibility for that. Now, you can come over and say, and try to, you know, fix me and say, oh, you don't have any responsibility. But I do. You know what I mean? I feel like I do, and I don't care what you tell me. I know what my withdrawal of love did to that animal. Because that animal is just, her whole life is love. That's all she's about, is love. That's all she wanted to do, was give and get love. And when that was cut, I mean, it was cut. It was cut because I was busy, you know? And she was left alone a lot. It was bad. So when I was writing, I got in touch with, I mean, that was the worst I think I ever felt, that just tremendous amount of seeing the devastation that I caused in a being that I loved. That was the clearest for me. That was the clearest example. And what God did, which was really an awesome thing, was gave me, shifted my perception this much to let me see that all of a sudden I made this connection. My dog didn't do anything wrong. There was nothing wrong with her that stopped me from loving her. It was all my shit, right? And I suddenly, God gave me this connection that, oh my God, there wasn't anything wrong with me either. My mother just wasn't capable. Like, all this time, I grew, my whole life, growing up, feeling like, what is wrong with me? Why won't she accept me? Why am I not good enough? Whatever. Like, just, you know, and I didn't, whatever. I didn't overtly say that, but I based my whole life on it. Feeling less than, feeling inadequate, feeling self-loathing. What the hell did I do wrong? Why couldn't I make her love me the way I felt like I needed to? And God just gave me that shift in perception where I saw, you know, like, she just couldn't. She just couldn't. I mean, she did. She loved me, but she just couldn't give me what I felt I needed because she didn't get it, you know? And it was like this huge dam that just released, and I was free of a lot of that stuff that I carried around my whole life. And that was just in the process of writing the fourth step. I didn't even need anybody to, you know, that was just a gift of writing. And to try to be briefly, wrap it up a little bit, is just to get to the fifth step. My process with the fifth step was really interesting this time, too, because I got into a huge fight with my sponsor the morning. She was quitting smoking when I was doing my fifth step, and she was a bear. I mean, she was a bear. And it was a very, very, she's been a huge miracle in my life. God has put her in my life. Like, I have learned so much about relationship with this woman because we've had the courage to show up for one another. And like all those times when I normally always would run away, I stayed because I needed her, and I knew that she had what I needed. I knew I had to stay. So I was willing to work through it, but like, and it's hard to be honest and say, like, I don't feel safe with you. Like, I got to do this, and I am not feeling very sick, you know. And she, it was hard for her, too, because she wanted to be there, but she couldn't change the fact of where she was. So it was a bit of an emotional morning, let me tell you. We go to a meeting, and I just went into this back room, and I'm like, breakdown. I'm in meltdown, like, oh my God, or that, you know. Like, it's just awful, the most awful experience what's happening to me and all this shit. And, you know, because my sponsor, I was a godsend to me, and she's so dedicated to this program and to healing and to recovery that she is really able always to zero in on the exact nature. Like, I count on her for that, you know. So I'm feeling like I'm on my own. Oh no, what am I going to do? And so what I did was I went into the other room and had my meltdown. I felt my feelings, which is new. I prayed to God on my knees in the other room in the meeting, like, help. She came in, another addict came in, we talked the whole thing out, and we proceeded on. You know what I mean? It wasn't ideal circumstances, but we were honest. We didn't pretend it wasn't there. We didn't play games. I didn't run away. We went on with it. You know what I mean? We invited God in. We said, okay, we got to make sure God's right in the dead center of this one, because otherwise it's not going to work. So, you know, then we go back to my house, and we proceed to do this fifth step. And I'm thinking that the whole time I'm writing this fourth step, I'm writing about all the different things, obviously, you know, that are in there. You know, so many different things. And as I'm talking to her, I'm reading, and, like, I didn't even need her to point out the exact nature, because every page Approval seeking, approval seeking, approval seeking, approval seeking, needing acceptance. See, I had no self-acceptance, and nearly everything that I did and wrote in that thing was about getting the love that I felt like I needed, trying to get that love that I couldn't generate for myself. I needed everybody's approval. I needed everybody's acceptance. And mine didn't matter because, you know, I had no self-acceptance, so I was nobody. And my whole life was based on fear of not getting that acceptance because I thought that I wouldn't get the love that I needed, you know. And it was crystal clear. I didn't need her to point that out to me. And it was more God. You know, I need more God going on. And it was one of those things, which is anybody who knows me, like I have a little tendency to be neurotic every once in a while, you know. I mean, I can be a little bit neurotic. I'll cop to that. And I still have a lot of fear-based stuff, so, yeah, you're laughing, right, because of the sap, I know. I got off, by the way, to get the sap off, so that was, I had a little neurotic breakdown before this meeting. And in any case, I would be like having to read every page. It was very important that you listen to me and make sure that, you know, you hear me. I do believe that, too, that hearing and listening are very, very important things. We all need that, and I try to give that to people in my life. And I ask for it now when I need it instead of freaking out and leaving, you know. But less important than that this time, it was more important that I heard him for the first time in my whole life. And like all those things that I wrote, like I saw my exact nature. It really was. It was the exact nature of nearly everything that was going on that I felt bad about that was a problem in my life was fear. Bottom line, that was it. And most of it was approval seeking. Fear of not being accepted. Fear of being embarrassed. Fear of, you know, not getting what I think I need. And it all had to do with love. That's all I really wanted. And that was, you know, and that was a big freedom for me. And the beautiful thing is that, you know, the inventory and the fourth and fifth step was like, okay, I have that information. Doesn't mean I'm cured now. You know what I mean? But I have it, which is good because I did my whole life without knowing that really. You know what I mean? I didn't know that I based my whole life on it. And now that I know, I get the opportunity to, you know, work other steps in my life with that, you know what I mean? Because now I can see that happening, so I can say, hey, let me apply a step. And so this isn't a six-step meeting or you'd be in for a real story, because let me tell you how it went. It was a bear, the six-step, with that whole thing. But, you know, the six-step gave me the tools to see. I was willing. I showed up. I let God be in charge. And it gave me the tool progress in the rest of the program, and it's a lifelong process. And I know there'll be more inventories, and there are little mini inventories all over the place too. But that's I guess that's the primary thing that I can think of in my experience that on the fourth and fifth step. And I look forward to writing again. You know what I mean? I know that right now. All right, last little thing. I'll be brief. I gotta share it because it's because I didn't get a chance to say how grateful I am to our customers. When I left, when I relapsed, that after that 7-year period, I had busied myself into graduate school, and I was done with my graduate courses, and I was one chapter into my master's thesis, and that was when I quit. And, 10 years have gone by, and the topic of my thesis is writing and healing. It was an English thesis. It was about a woman, you know, who had breast cancer, who did that. But it was, you know, that's the topic of the whole thing. And like I got the opportunity last year to complete this. And I was talking about how I had to do a defense yesterday. I had to defend my thesis. And let me tell you, I was terrified. Because, I mean, they call it a defense, you know what I mean? So, of course, you're not supposed to be defensive. It was like I'm supposed to go in and all these people are supposed to ask me, you know, critical questions about what I, you know, my heart. This is my part that I wrote because it was my experience, really, that I just, you know what I mean, inserted into this whole project. And I went in there, and it was deep because on the way here I was thinking, it's funny, I'm asked to speak on the fourth and fifth step because that's just what it felt like, a fifth step. And I applied those principles. And I trusted God, and I prayed. And I was scared. I'm not saying I wasn't scared, but I went through it anyway. And I said, God, please help me. God, please help me. Because I was really, really scared. Because I wasn't prepared. I had all kinds of shit. I was in Philly, stuck in traffic with a new doctor. I didn't get to study like I wanted to, so I didn't have the control. So I had to go to God. you know. So I went to God, and, you know, and I got through it, you know what I mean? I did the best I could. I did study, you know, and I did the best I could. And, you know, Friday, on the way up here, I got the approval, and I'm done. And I finished it, and that is only thanks to Narcotics Anonymous. And that is, my gratitude is huge, because it's a fear that I faced, something I quit that I came back to and I faced, like this young was saying that, you know, that was speaking here before about, you know, facing your fears and, you know, just dealing with them. And it's such a, the reward from doing that is beyond measure. And that's why I just wanted to say that so I could say thank you. And thanks for letting me share.
Next speaker is John L.
Good morning. My name is John, and I'm an addict.
John.
I spilt water all over myself. I'm not incontinent or whatever that is. I need to explain myself to how I look, you know, because I don't want you to get the wrong impression. Last Tuesday, and I need to say this, and I need to say it for a couple of reasons. One, because you're experiencing, or at least partially what I have experienced, and hopefully you will get to it. But I turned 60 last Tuesday, and I know I don't look it. I know I don't look, and I know I don't act it. But sometimes my body reminds me that I'm way past 60. I mean, I have places, you know, that's why I wanted to explain this thing. Because, you know, the day may come, I might be looking at the, well, oh, I'm sorry, where's the detent? but there's not, and I need to talk about getting older, because it's something we're all afraid of. And nobody signs up for it. I mean, you don't think you're ever going to get old. I mean, you really don't. I don't even know what the fuck 60 is. I mean, I'm really dumb, you know. I mean, I am, but I don't know what it means. You know, I know when I saw somebody that was 60, I felt bad for them. I did, for real. Oh, 60. You know, I did. And I still do. I still, it's just that it's not me. But it's okay to get older. It's okay to be okay with who I am and the fact that I'm 60. Yeah, I can be okay with that. I can't always be okay with it, but you know, I mean, and that's kind of like staying clean. You know, sometimes you just want to use, but you don't pick up. And it's like being okay, and sometimes I'm not okay. But my spirit is. My spirit, my feeling might say, oh, you're fucked. It's over. You know, because all those tapes play. And you look, I mean, you look around the fellowship, and there's a lot of young people. And I don't see any difference, except when somebody says, who were the Beatles? For real, you know. I mean, like, or Jim who? You know? I mean, I get confused because I thought everybody knew. I thought everybody, you know, I thought everybody was there. And I just didn't remember who really was there. I even thought I was there when I wasn't. I'm serious. One of the things that deadheads do is they'll say, hey, remember that show in Rochester? And oh, wow, wasn't that a hot show? Yeah, I wasn't any fucking near Rochester. But I wasn't lying. I mean, that's the part that, you know, was really, I mean, I wasn't lying. That was a great show, and I thought I was there. I really thought I was there. And so when they talked about in the basic text about having a fatally flawed perception, that's what it means. Now, would you get in a car with me knowing that whatever I saw was untrue and let me drive? Right? Because, I mean, that's what we do as addicts. We're given this blessing, you know, called a life or whatever you want to call it. And we start driving around, and I think I'm going down this one-way street the right way, and people are running the fuck into me. I don't know I'm going in the wrong direction. My perception's fatally flawed. And I like that because that means that I can be corrected. I can get some corrective lenses in here. And they're called spiritual principles. They'll help me see things differently. Talks about in our text about how we can change history. Think about that. I can change my history by the way I look at it, by the way I perceive it now. And this is what the fourth step's about. It's about getting a record down. I mean, making a list. I was an accountant. And one of the things accountants do is they take inventories, they count shit. And that's what they do. You got 12 of these, and you got 57 of those. Why do you got this? Get rid of those 57. They ain't never going to move. You know, it's just like selling dope. You know, I mean, like you have an inventory. I don't know about you, but I've sold a lot of dope in my day. I mean, a lot. And this is the for real, God's honest truth. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I ain't never made any money. You remember how, like, when you'd get a pound, you'd get 16 ounces, you'd say, fuck, you sell 12, you keep 4, right? Yeah, I sold 4, I kept 12. You can't sell 4 to pay for 16 unless you're selling them to me. Well, I'm the only fool that's going to pay that much for it. Even if it ain't nothing but a headache. I need to thank the committee for asking me to share. And it's always a privilege to come to the meeting. We all are the meeting. Just because somebody speaks, that's not the meeting. If nobody listens, nobody speaks. So I mean, like, it's a mutual thing. It's what we do together. Now, and NA does this, and you got to, like, put your foot down and stop them. But they make heroes out of speakers. They ride them for a year or two. And boy, hey, did you hear him? He's fucking hot. Or did you hear her message? Man, she was great. And then, you know, spring comes around. You know, she wasn't as good as she was in the fall. So I'm going to bring her back. Now, what changed? I mean, what changed? The person didn't. The person's sharing their message. But the person was listening. Didn't hear the message. Didn't hear what they wanted to hear. Maybe they weren't entertained enough. We do that. I know, because it's been done to me. It's been done to me, and I've seen it done to others. We take them, we lift them up, and then all of a sudden when you lift it up, you think, well, fuck, I can't fuck up now. I'm a speaker. Speakers can't have problems. Bullshit. You know, I mean, I had 6 months clean, and my sponsors started taking me places to share. A year and 15 months, my father died. A year and a few months after that, my mother died. 2 or 3 years after that, I went through the worst pain imaginable in a relationship. I've gone through bankruptcy and recovery. I mean, don't lift me up so that when I come to a meeting, I can't tell you where it hurts. So we need to really be careful how we treat people that get up to share, because they're no different than that. I mean, the meeting ain't about the person speaking. The meeting's about the message. There's no message if nobody hears it. So you've got to pay attention. It's up to you to listen. All I've got to do is, like, open my mouth and trust God, which is what I do. I don't have a fucking clue what's coming out next. I don't. It's not like, wait a minute. Oh. No, it ain't like that. It ain't like that. I don't know what I'm... I don't know what I'm going to say. I only know this from my experience. 13 years of doing this. Doing it on both sides. Speaking and listening. That there's a message to be heard. There's a message. There's something here for everybody. This ain't like our old things. When there wasn't enough to go around. When you got left out. Whether it was about affection at the table, or if it was dope on a mirror. You know, you don't get left behind in NX. There's something for everybody. Now the message for him that he hears might be different than the message that he hears. But it's the same thing. The only way it works is if you listen. Now you can't listen if you're looking at her. You can't listen if you're thinking about what he said. You can't listen if you're wondering what's going to be, you know, what's going to happen in an hour. You can't be pissed off about what happened 15 minutes ago. You got to listen. The only way you can listen is to be here. So get that shit out of your mind and pay attention. For real, you got to listen. Because you were picked to be here. You thought you left your meeting early. And you got here because God wanted you here right now. Now think about that. Everybody who's at the meeting showed up. These are all the people. And don't be worried because there's empty seats. Everybody who's here was supposed to be here. Nobody missed the meeting. Nobody missed the meeting. And think of the universe, and I don't get too wrapped up in God. I really don't. I just don't. And that's a whole other thing, and I'm not going to go into that. But I do believe that there's a certain order to this universe that's irrefutable. That you just can't explain, nor do you need to. And if that's true, and I believe that to be true, then it stands to reason that this star was placed here today. How about a long time ago? To be here now. All of us. That's why it's important to pay attention. That's why it's important to pay attention. Okay. Having said all that, now I'll share a little bit about like the fourth and the fifth step. I'll say a little bit because my new watch tells me. I do this now. See, I started this. I spoke at a meeting, and I have a tendency to like talk for a while. And I made the analogy that people have gone through puberty while I've been speaking. You know, they've lost body hair. You know, I mean, like, and I'll tell you why, and you know it because you can feel it. When we're in this, it's a real good feeling. I mean, it's a real good feeling to be this connected to you. You know, to feel you intimately. To look in your eyes and to see you look back at me. To feel the connection. It isn't just this way. It's this way. It goes around in a circle. It comes through us. Such as a power that's greater than, and drives right back down again. Now, man, I don't want that to stop. I mean, that's why it's hard. You know, they said, John, speak for 20 minutes. I can't mention my name in 20 minutes. I can't. And I don't, listen, I don't talk a lot. People who know me know when in our personal relationships, you've got to like, you know, you've got to pay me to get me to talk about myself. But something happens, and I feel that power that's greater than and touches me, touches you, touches that. Man, I just don't want to stop. That's why I need to walk. So anyways, at the meeting, I said to the person, I said, can I have your watch? So I, you know, sure, you can have my watch. And then I didn't want to give it back after the meeting. And I thought, this is a great way to get watches. This is a great, because, you know, I mean, well, sure, you can have my watch. I mean, fuck, you're going to give me the watch. They don't know what I'm going to do with it. You know? And the last time I did this, I gave the watch away, which really pissed the person off. Because I said, here, you keep this for me, and you tell me when my time is up. Well, the first, and this is a nice watch. You know, it was a nice, had some gold shit on it, you know. And then after, and I said, oh, and by the way, keep the watch. Well, they don't want it to like me. Fuck, it ain't my watch, right? And she's going nuts behind me. That's my watch. You know, can't say anything because she wants to be spiritual, you know, but inside it's killing her. I'm fucking going, watch. I had a sponsor for the first five steps with the same sponsor. I've always had a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor. Just a little history. I better keep this up here. Is that right? Is that the date? Is it a quarter after, 20 after?
Yeah.
11? No.
That watch is fast.
Good. Because I'm not. One of it better be, huh? I came off the streets. I came to Narcotics Anonymous not because of a judge, not because of a rehab, not because of a wife, not because of anybody but pain. I started using in the middle 50s, 1955, 56, somewhere in there. And by the time it got to be 1990, I had a list of pain that was so long that my spirit was broken. Just broken. Shattered. And she said something about like how we always desire to get back to that place where we were when love was our core. And that's our journey as a spirit. And no, I can't do that. I was broken. I didn't have any hope. I didn't even know what addiction was. And I had an alcoholic father. Alcoholic, it was just prevalent in my family. You know, and the people that weren't alcoholic, they ate too much. Or they gambled too much. I mean, it was always something, you know? There was always something standing between us and what we desired in our spirit. So when I got here, that's what I was. I was just broken. And I got a sponsor. And I mean, and I didn't like the people. I'm from Meadville. And I don't know if you're ever up in Meadville, three of us are from Meadville. And thank you for coming down. Meadville people, I mean, they're like fucking Republicans. They are. You know, I mean, it's terrible. I mean, Nixon could run for election now and get Kerry Crawford County. I didn't fit in real good up there. And when I came in and sat down in a meeting, and I grew up in the 60s, you know. I was 17 when John Kennedy was president. You know? I just didn't feel like I fit in. Forgetting all the other stuff inside. I mean, what was obvious to me by looking at the surface, I didn't fit in. So it was hard for me. When they said, well, you got to get a sponsor. And this one guy comes up to me. And he scared me. He scared me. Good little round fellow. He comes up and he says, God told me to be your sponsor. What? And I says, well, God didn't tell me. And they said it about that way, too. You know, a little bit of a fucking attitude. And that's changed. So then I find my sponsor. My sponsor, we start on the steps. We do one. And then I'm excited about the steps, except for 8 and 9, but they're far enough down the road I don't have to worry about them. Maybe I could skate. You know, because I'm not planning on staying clean. I didn't come here to stop using. For real, I didn't come. I didn't want, that isn't why I came here, to stop hurting. Something happened once I stopped using. I noticed that a lot of the pain stopped. And I made a connection there somehow. That, you know, maybe if I didn't, my environment, never internally. And I could say it would be the steps. And I seen the steps. They read the steps. They talked about the steps. It was the steps. Sponsors helped me through the steps. And I did the first step, and I was excited about that. And I wrote. Man, I wrote. And I did the second step in the second year. And it wasn't like a step a year thing. It's just that we took our time. Well, the only thing I hurried doing was life before I got here. Time was my enemy when I got here. Time has become my best friend since I've stayed. So I get to the first three steps are wonderful. I mean, it is great to know that not only are you not going to be crazy, that there was a time when you weren't crazy. Because you get restored to sanity, which means you can't restore something to something that it never was. So I must have been sane at some point in time. And maybe it was when the water broke. I'm not sure. Because I don't really remember it. But it was there. I mean, they promised me that. And I loved that step. And the third step is great. I mean, you know, you take a hippie and you say, look, you know, if you want to do this one, oh, yeah. Yeah, I want to touch something. I want, you know, right? I mean, that just appealed to me. Naturally. But this next one, this fourth one, to make a searching and fearless moral inventory. When I know what searching is. Where'd I put the shit? I know what searching is. I know how to look. I look behind things, you know. I'd have a skillet in the cupboard. Maybe something fell behind the skillet. What the fuck? There's nothing behind the skillet. Except maybe a hole. You know, there's no dough. I know what searching is. I know what searching is to find one more. I know what lengths I would go to. Just for the promise of getting one. You know? So I understood the mathematics of searching. I knew that. And I could apply that. That's a skill I have. I looked. I could do that. Fearless I wasn't real good at. But see, I had a sponsor that didn't tell me it was a fearful. And you hear people talk about the four step, and they're going, oh, my God. I mean, like, who would work a four step sometimes when you hear the way people talk about it? It's a life-changing experience. There's nothing to fear in these steps. Nothing. Nothing. There's not a step that's full of fear. Every step is full of hope. Every step, in of itself, can make a crooked way straight. For real. So I make this searching and fearless moral inventory. They didn't have, when I worked this step, they didn't have a step working guide, obviously. And they didn't have it works how and what. So, I mean, like, it was just him and I in that little brown book. You know, that step four booklet. And in there it says, this is what I love about NA's literature. Is sometimes they just lowball it. You know, they really do. They say, you may find material in your four steps from relationships. You mean you might? You just might. Well, my whole fourth step was about relationships, in one form or another, whether it was with an institution, a family member, a friend, a faceless person along the way. You know? Resentments. You might have some resentments. That's what I don't have no resentment. I'm not mad about anything. Sponsor says, make a list. Just make a list. Just write something down. Make it up if you have to. Put something down. So I started writing resentments. Well, my circle starts in and out. I start closest. Well, I'm resentful towards my father. Put him down. My mother. My brother. Fucking uncle. You know? Now my list that went from nothing, now I got 42 names on it. I'm not even like for real. You know, if I went back and did it now, you could put another digit there. You know, because my clarity's better. But at the time, I went from nothing to 42 in a heartbeat. And I began to identify how I was feeling and what the results of the feelings and the relationships that I had. More importantly, I seen my actions. I didn't see what my uncle did to me. I seen how I felt about my uncle and what I did to him. And the way I cut his legs out from underneath him, every chance I got. The way I fought with my father. My father may have hit me once or twice. I don't know for sure. I mean, like, you'd think I'd remember it. So he probably did. And if he did, he probably just slapped me upside the head. I mean, some people come here beaten. You know, some people come here beaten. I wasn't abused physically, but my father hit me daily, emotionally. And, you know, the sap comes off. The sap comes off. We can rub something on and make it better. But the bruises inside on the spirit, if ever, take a long time to heal. And I would fight with my dad like, I would make fun of him. Like, you know, he's a little older than me, and he ain't as quick as I was. Come on. You know, I knew I was getting him. I'd just get all pissed off, and that's how I would fight him. That's how I'd get even. I mean, that's how I'd weigh it out. There, you fucker. I mean, that's what I'd do. That's what I would do. I couldn't hit him, but I could sure make him miserable. And I couldn't make him close to as miserable as he made me. And that's my mind. See, I didn't see it clearly. I didn't know the way it was. That was my perception. And it was flawed. It was a lie. I didn't know the way it was at all. And it's a whole other lead as to how it really was. And one I'm not going to get into right now. But I wrote that down. Wrote a bunch of stuff down. Something happened to me, what time is it? 11:30. And we eat at noon, right? Right? Well, we got to be out here by 10 to 12. That's if you're hungry. God knows we've gone without meals. Well, let's see. I got $5. Fuck. I ain't gonna eat. Yeah? All right, here's what happened to me. When I was about 12, 13, and 14, now, this was something that I had to share with my sponsor and my fourth step. And I didn't even say it out loud. I knew it happened. I remember it vividly. But I wasn't going to say it out loud to me. I wasn't going to say it out loud to him. Because as a result of what had happened, I felt dirty. I felt broken. I felt unclean. I felt less than. I didn't feel that I'd ever be right. Listen to me, I want to say that again. I didn't feel, because of what had happened, that I would ever, ever be okay. I had two cousins, boy and girl, and we grew up together. We were the same ages, 8 months separated the two of us. And we would play together, and we would act out together. And we acted out sexually together. And one cousin in particular, he was a driving force in this. He set up the scenarios for everything to act out. And I did things with my cousins sexually that left me just feeling terrible. Just feeling terrible. And I carried them for 35 years. They affected every relationship I had with men and with women. And I felt like crazy. How in the fuck am I going to talk about this? Nobody says anything. So I thought, well, I'm going to trust this process. See, by now I had a relationship with my sponsor that had been reaffirmed and reaffirmed and reaffirmed that, man, I can trust this man. He's not going to think less of me no matter what. I'm going to take the one thing I said I'd never tell anybody out. Throw it down on the table. See what happens. Because I knew what a load that it had been. Now, I'm not talking about anything that you haven't experienced. See, I thought I was the only one. For real. Didn't you? Didn't you? When it happened to you? When you did it? Didn't you? I did. Nobody's ever... No, can't be. And that was my approach. And I sat down with Gibbs and I told him what happened. And he listened to me and he said, well, let me tell you something, Joan. That's a common occurrence. It's a common occurrence. Doesn't make it right, but it's a naturally common occurrence. And man, it was like somebody just took this load off my back. Took it off. And I don't know how it is with you. You put a heavy load on my back, I'm like this. Spiritually. I'm talking, I may look good, I might sound good, I might talk good, I might be funny, clever, hip, slick, and cool and all that shit, but inside my spirit's been over. My spirit's down. And he took it off me. Set it on the side and said, listen, there's nothing wrong with you. You're okay. You're okay. You know what that was like? And I share that at me. Because, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, I'm going through something right now. Well, what the fuck is something right now? Tell me what you're going through. I want to know what it is. For one thing, I'm really curious. I really am. Yeah, I want to know. I want to know. I want to know what it's like to go just have to defend a thesis. I want to know. I want to know what the fear is like. I want to know. Put a name on it, because somebody out there is going through it. They're not going through something. They're going through this. Now, some of you have gone through what I've gone through. Some of you have gone through what I've gone through. Some of you, listen, it is a lot about victims. And it's a lot about perpetrators. But most of all, it's about forgiveness. It's about healing. It's about finding a spirit that is broken and being remade. I'm going to close with this. I mean, that happened. And it's just part of what Mark Wortham said. And I'm starting the steps over again. I go out with Mr. Chuck. Actually, I was waiting for Mr. Chuck. And Mr. Chuck is my new friend. I have a woodchuck out in my backyard. And I have a hard time making friends. I'm going to start with animal forms and work my way up, I guess. I don't know. But I just love animals, you know. And I've been leaving carrots out for Mr. Chuck, and he likes them, and he's getting fat, you know. And he's got, you know, there's a little baby chuck, and I'm thinking, motherfucker, he's found somebody else. You know, I'm already jealous of this other chuck, you know. But I'm going to get okay with it because I'm working a program. So I'm leaving, like, carrots for him and apples and stuff. Now I got this blind set up by where he comes out of the bushes. And I'm a photographer, among other things. And I got this little hole cut, and I went over to Kmart, and I bought myself a green sheet, you know, and I hung it up. Even got myself a camouflage chair. Like, oh, I can't see the chair. I'll come out now, says Mr. Chuck. You know, what the fuck? How dumb is that? So I'm sitting here, and I'm getting pictures of Mr. Chuck, you know, and I'm just like feeling really good about this. And then I realized, you know, it's no wonder I have a hard time with relationships. It's no wonder I have a hard time. I'm just learning how to do this. And I got to hide behind a camouflage sheet to watch. You know, what do I do with you? I've been clean for 13 years. I've lived through a lot of things and seen more than I need to see. And I still am just beginning to learn how to live. Just learning how to live. Learning how to love. I'll close with this. I believe this with all my heart. Somebody said this in this way. Our hearts are restless till they rest in thee. St. Augustine said that. And I know that that's my journey. And my thee is you. My thee is you. I'm trapped in a body that sees, hears, touches, tastes, and feels. I got physical senses that I rely on. You know, so I don't bump into shit. I don't pick up the thing that thought that I thought was cold. I don't spill shit on them. You know? But my spirit has senses too. My spirit has senses too. So does yours. And right now there's nothing in between us. There's no sheep there. And we're really, like, connected. And that's what this program's all about. That's what the steps are all about. That's how you learn to do this. It's been my experience here. Now, I've never been loved like I've been loved in Narcotics Anonymous. I've never been. People didn't ask me for an opinion. They asked me for 20. Right? They asked me for a ride. Do you have any? Is it any good? Can you get more? Three fundamental questions. Well, nobody said how you feel. Yeah, I miss you. I love you. I want to thank you for listening. That it's an act of love. And I've been told this and I believe it. It's an act of love to listen to somebody. You know, thanks for making the circle go around. Making the circle go around. Thank the committee for allowing me to share. And I thank Jonathan for the watch. Thank you.
We actually have 5 minutes left. Is that so much there? Okay, I'd like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Can we have the ring just for today at the podium?
Okay. Works for me.
Try to get a better perspective on the life.